human life is intrinsically valuable. Beauty, truth, knowledge is intrinsically valuable. Those are really cool things, really important things, don't you think? Those things
they're really important. But I mean, having introduced the concept of intrinsic value, I'm pretty suspicious of it. I think philosophers tend to say, "Oh, it's intrinsically valuable," when they really want you to value something and they can't really think of any good explanation, a good reason why you should. Maybe art's like that.
Well, but look, I see your point. There's the distinction itself is kind of. We could probe it more, but let's grant art is intrinsically valuable because it's intrinsically tied to pleasure, don't you think?
Well, yes, okay, let's grant that art is intrinsically valuable or as close as something comes, because to contemplate art or maybe to produce art is intrinsically valuable. Still, what follows from that? I mean, suppose you're a teacher and you've got a chocolate chip cookie that you'd like to eat and get the intrinsic pleasure of eating the chocolate chip cookie, but you need chalk. Wouldn't you trade the cookie and the intrinsic pleasure that comes with it for some chalk so you can do your lesson? But chalk's really only extrinsically valuable.
Yeah, a chocolate chip cookie, yeah, that's a... I get your point, but if something's intrinsically valuable, you think it has the highest kind of value. Isn't that the best way you can have value, is to be intrinsically valuable? So if art's intrinsically valuable, you should give up a lot of things to get it.
Well, I think that's true in a way and a fallacy in a way. As a matter of fact, people will give up a lot of pleasures, a lot of things that are intrinsically valuable in order to get money, which is surely the paradigm of the extrinsically valuable.
So you're suggesting that we can't settle these questions about how much we should spend on the arts, whether we should have them in education, by pointing out the intrinsic value of art, because art also has to be caught up in this network of things that have merely extrinsic value.
Yeah, so, I think saying art has intrinsic value is a little bit like saying art has value real loudly.
Yeah, I think you're... I mean, that's a good point. But, you know, our roving philosophical reporter, Polly Stryker, discovered something about the extrinsic value of art in a medical setting, of all places. She files this report.
So we're looking at the art cart, and this is a cart that we bring around with us when we visit patients here in the hospital.
These days, medicine turns to art more and more as a tool to help people cope with illness. At Stanford Hospital, Sylvia Dolce coordinates the Art for Health program.
The art cart is filled with art supplies. So we have things like markers, oil pastels, watercolor. And basically, our aim when we visit patients is really, first of all, to get a sense of who they are and getting a sense of what's exciting for them. How will art spark their interest or be nourishing for them?
We paid a visit to Gracie, a young woman fighting cancer. Gracie plans to keep her art as a reminder of her battle against the disease.
AML is acute myeloid leukemia. That's what I was diagnosed with. And art therapy has actually helped me clear my mind. And it's a way to kind of escape knowing that my cancer is there. We made this picture where we kind of painted the background and we cut out a butterfly and then we just glued it so it kind of looks three-dimensional, and it's very pretty. You gotta see it for yourself.
Today, the use of art as a therapeutic tool is part of an integrative medicine trend that embraces practices once considered alternative. To skeptics, Sylvia Dolce says,
I would never say and tell anybody that if they paint or draw, that it's going to make them heal.
But she says it's obvious that art helps patients and their families. 2 weeks before our interview, Dolce went to the bedside of a stroke victim, a young man with two small children.
So they called me in, and before disconnecting him from life support, what I did and what some of us do here sometimes is we paint the patient's hand and we imprint the parent's hand on like a paper pulp heart. And then if the child wants to, they'll color their own hand and print it on the heart next to the parent's heart, sometimes with the thumbs touching. That is like their parent's last imprint.
Psychoanalysts use art therapy when words fail their patients. Dr. David Spiegel is a professor of psychiatry at Stanford University's School of Medicine. He hopes to get funding to conduct a clinical trial using art therapy to help veterans deal with post-traumatic stress disorder.
You know, it's been called speechless horror. There are situations that people witness or are part of that really overwhelm one's ability to speak about it. When one is overwhelmed by existential dread, by changes in body image. It may be that you can't fully comprehend or express your situation in words. And I think art therapy can be a way to help people explore and understand their own reactions to their situation better.
At the Stanford Hospital, Sylvia Dolce knows that art therapy helps people.
I know some people who've battled cancer, and they say that engaging in their own creative process really helped them and gave them the strength to keep going. And they feel that that made a major difference in their recovery.
For Philosophy Talk, I'm Polly Stryker.
I'm John Perry, and with me is Ken Taylor.
And joining us today is Cynthia Freeland. She's professor and chair of the Department of Philosophy at the University of Houston, and she's author of But Is It Art? Cynthia, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Hi, Cynthia. Let me ask you first a sort of personal question. How'd you get involved in this? Why are you pouring all your intellectual energy into thinking philosophically about the arts?
Partly because I love art myself, and I wanted to share the love of art with my students. And I just wanted to try to deal with some of the questions about art and society that have been brought up by some of the really provocative sorts of art that happened, especially in the late 80s. So some of the things like Serrano and Mapplethorpe and so on.
Mapplethorpe, well, there's a guy. Okay, so suppose somebody, you're confronted with somebody that kind of a skeptic who doesn't share your passion for Mapplethorpe or maybe even your passion for any of the arts. Art schmart. If you like it, fine. If you don't like it, fine. Me, I prefer baseball. Well, how might you go about convincing them of the importance or even intrinsic value of art? What would you say?
I think my shortest answer would be to say that art is a symbolic expression of meaning and that humans intrinsically value meaning. To that particular skeptic, I'd say, well, baseball is a very artful sport. It's beautiful.
Let's take this definition one step at a time. So we got symbolic expression of meaning.
So
what is this? What do you mean by meaning? What is art expressing? Meaning, I mean, it's like words have meaning, but do paintings have meaning in the same way words do?
No, they don't have meaning in the same way words do, and that's partly why we value them. Paintings sometimes are easier to understand than sentences, and during the Middle Ages, for example, you had stained glass windows in cathedrals to tell stories about Jesus and what happened in the Bible, and people could understand those stories even if they weren't literate.
So, from that point of view, being able to understand art would be as important as being literate, being able to read. Is that your view?
But that's tricky because this symbolic expression of meaning, arts come in kind of a hierarchy, I guess. Or so. I mean, some are very wordy. Literature is very wordy. Drama is very wordy. Movies are wordy. But music doesn't have to be wordy at all. And some painting, it's just completely abstract, and I can't figure out any of the meaning in it. So if art is about the symbolic expression of meaning, it's kind of weird, don't you think, John, that because some arts don't really seem to express meaning.
Well, maybe that's because they're better expressing meaning. Maybe that's what is meant by the symbolic expression of meaning. So let's follow up on the rest of this definition here.
Yeah, it's a complicated thing, this symbolic expression of meaning. Cynthia, are you there? Are you with us?
I think our guest has slipped away.
Yeah, probably we're having some technical difficulties.
Probably in some kind of reverie with contemplating some piece of art.
John, you and I agree. So, I often think about this. I mean, I love representational art. And what Cynthia was saying about the symbolic expression of meaning seems to me to make a lot of sense about representational arts. And I think of those as the highest kind of arts in some ways. But, I'm really troubled about I sometimes have a hard time coping with non-representational arts and trying to figure out what they're for.
Well, let's go back to this concept of meaning. To me, meaning is you have one event in the world, and that event somehow tells you about the rest of the world. So language is the most specific kind. You say our guest has slipped away from the telephone, and I learned something about what's happened in Houston. But so now how could art be meaningful in that sense? Well, I mean, art can help me organize my emotions. It can help me look at things in a new way. So art.
Those are meanings.
Yeah, those are meanings.
So there you're back. Yeah, you're back. So tell us.
I'm here.
Yeah. So tell me about this. Your definition of art seemed to apply to representational arts more than to non-representational.
Think about something like the Vietnam Memorial in Washington.
Okay.
It's an abstract piece of sculpture. But I think most people who've been to visit it, and many people do go to visit it, feel that it has a lot of meaning. It's very deep and profound meaning, and it expresses emotional feelings about the country's involvement in the Vietnam War and all the losses that people faced.
Now, in that case, we could kind of explain the meaning step by step. We could say, well, the gash in the ground is kind of allegorical for the gash in the life of the body politic, and the length of it is kind of corresponds to the length of it. Is it always possible to make those kinds of bit by bit correlations with things when they have meaning in the way that art does?
No, I don't think so. I think that's part of the point, is if we could always translate it into something in words, we wouldn't need the art.
Yeah, so you're listening to Philosophy Talk. Our guest is Cynthia Freeland from the University of Houston. We're talking about the value of art, and we'd like you to join us after a break. The number's going to be 415-841-4134. So, okay, I think I get your point, Cynthia. Let me try this out. Art can be expressive of meaning. Even it can have a kind of an expressive meaning, even if it's not kind of representational. Is that
right?
Is that kind of part of the point?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of music would be like that.
Right. So music can be highly expressive without being, depicting this or that kind of scene or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Wagner's Flight of the Valkyries can express certain ferocity and a certain kind of power that we can all recognize, even if you can't exactly say, well, this part means this.
So let me try to summarize your position. The ability to produce art and to appreciate art is analogous to the ability to produce language and appreciate language. There's a dimension of meaning, of communication, of understanding a part of the world and thereby understanding more of the world that you'd miss out on if you couldn't speak or understand language. And there's something similar going on with art. And in some ways, they're complementary. You can use art, particularly the non-representational arts like music, but even the visual ones, to express things that are hard to capture in language. And so in that sense, if it's not intrinsically valued, at least it's extraordinarily valuable, and life is really diminished without it.
You agree with
that's
that?
That's right. It's like the man in your therapy excerpt who talked about victims of post-traumatic stress disorder. They can express without words things that they can't put into words.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. Our subject today is the value of art. Our guest is Cynthia Freeland from the University of Houston.
The value of art. This is Philosophy Talk, and that's what we're talking about. Is art valuable on its own? Is it intrinsically valuable? Is it really that great a thing? Those are the questions we're wrestling with here on Philosophy Talk, and I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor, and our guest today is Cynthia Freeland from the University of Houston. She's the author of a fine book called But What Is It? But Is It Art? We kind of lost her for a little bit, so Cynthia, I'm reintroducing you to our audience. Welcome to Philosophy
Talk. Happy to be here.
Okay.
I'm still here.
Yeah, let's grant that. Let's grant this. Cynthia, having more art around, especially if it's beautiful art, makes our world more pleasing in lots of ways. But we were kind of talking about this already a little bit. But I want to know: does art have any use beyond this decorative function? Is art anything more than decoration for our world?
Well, I already tried to argue that art has is an symbolic expression of meaning, so it doesn't have to be decorative, and it can express feelings and emotions and sentiments. So I mentioned the Vietnam Memorial. There's going to be a World Trade Center Memorial. We're approaching 9/11, and I think we all have deep and conflicting feelings about that, and maybe having a memorial as a central gathering place can help people come to terms or, contemplate what happened and what it means.
So you mentioned that one of your interests in getting into the philosophy of art was various challenges posed by artists like Mapplethorpe and various movements in art. Now, do you think you can kind of gather those all under the rubric of the symbolic expression of meaning? I mean, I can see that definition really helps with the idea that if it's not beautiful, it's not art, or if it's not representational, it's not art. But you know, do all of these things really that we call art these days, the urinal in the museum, the canvas that's just a bunch of spatters, do they all fit your definition?
Well, I'd like to think so. You can try me out on one, I suppose.
How about John Cage's
the urinal.
4 minutes of silence or the urinal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes what the art means is something about art itself and the nature of art, and I think that's one of the things that's made art hard to understand.
I don't think our audience is hearing.
I guess our audience isn't hearing our guest.
Just right now. So I'll remind you, audience, this is Philosophy Talk. We're discussing the value of art. Do you think that art good art is intrinsically valuable? If so, why? If not, why not? Does art have an important social role, an important role to play in education, or is it just a dispensable frill? Tell us what you think, especially since we've lost our guest.
Let's kind of go through what we've gone through so far. We had this very interesting definition from our guest, Cynthia Freeland. Art is the symbolic expression of meaning. You might think that art is supposed to be decorative and beautiful, but this is a broader definition. It allows us to appreciate that isn't decorative or beautiful. It might be ugly, but still, it's expressing something, and it isn't doing it through ordinary language. It's doing it through allegory, symbolism, and it's getting not just at the ordinary kinds of meaning, but at emotions and things like that.
Give us a call and tell us what you think about this. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can send us an email at comments@philosophytalk.org. We'd love to hear what you think. You can talk to me and John about this, and we're trying to get our technical difficulties straightened out here.
So
415-841-4134.
How about you, Ken? You really think art is all that important? I mean, why do we go gaga over art and music and the visual arts and sculpture? And we think kids ought to learn to appreciate that. And yet, you know, most people get more pleasure out of a good baseball game.
I don't know. That's you might be thinking of high art, abstruse, abstract art that's inaccessible to ordinary people. But I think art is all around us, right? And I think Cynthia is deeply right about something. I think fundamentally art is about expressing meanings and conveying meanings and thinking up new ways to cognize and embody our experience in concrete expressions of the nature of that experience. And human beings are meaning-mongering creatures. We produce meaning, we consume meaning. I think art is really deep and really important. A world without art would be devoid not just of beauty, but of certain kind of vehicles for expressing our deepest urges.
Let's test out this definition a little bit. Take a boxing match, right? Is a boxing match art? One of the guy that does deep thoughts, what's his name? He said, look, a boxing match is just like ballet, except the dancers hit each other.
Well, that's a big except. That's competition rather than cooperation.
Jack Handley. Name just came to me. I mean, Cynthia's definition has the advantage of not being too narrow, so that things that are ugly, things that aren't very decorative, things you wouldn't want to hang in your living room, like, for example, most Mapplethorpe photographs, qualify as art. But is it, and I think Cynthia's back on the line now, so maybe she can answer this, is it too broad? Does it let too much in as art? Because aren't a lot of things a symbolic expression of meaning that we wouldn't call art?
So are you back with us, Cynthia?
I'm back here, and yeah. I'm happy we solved that problem.
Yeah, temporarily at least.
We did the low-tech way. We've got you on the phone rather than the ISDN.
I think that's one of the problems is that when we think of art, we tend to think of only the things that are in the opera or the symphony or the museum, but art is every aspect of our daily life. I think it has to do with, you know, the way that our furniture is designed and the way our fashion works and even the way we, you know, prepare and serve our food. And so having a world without any art would be a really empty and gray world.
I agree. It'd be totally empty and gray. And there would be things we could not express about our experience. And there are things you can express about your experience and your emotions only through the artistic process and through the mediums of art. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I definitely agree with that. And I think about things like funerals and losses, especially, you know, that when you have a loss, I lost a friend to cancer recently, and at the funeral, things like just music or a kind of poetic reading can be very healing. And it isn't just simply that that's an extrinsic value that helps to contemplate the event and add meaning to what is otherwise a really horrific event.
So it seems to me, maybe we can make a distinction here, though. I mean, you're advocating, as I understand it, that we go through life in kind of an artistic way. When we make a sandwich, we think not just about, you know, getting the meat and the mustard and the cheese and the bread all together, but it's better to do it in a kind of artistic way. Think about the meaning of what you're doing. Make it neat because you want to express the fact that, you know, food deserves some respect. Cut it in a so forth and so on. So living life artistically, thinking about the symbolic meaning of everything we do and what other people do, that seems like a valuable thing. But when people talk about the value of art, they usually have in mind objects, you know, like Picasso's and poems and, you know, you subscribe to the New Yorker and you read the stories and you read the news and notes and then you see and you look at the cartoons and then you see these pages with little bits of poetry and you say, I'm a schmuck because I don't read that stuff and I don't understand it and I feel bad about it. That's what people mean by art.
We've got a caller on the line, 415-841-4134. David in San Francisco, who wants to challenge you, Cynthia. David, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Hi, thank you. I'm not sure I heard the definition, although I heard you repeat it. As the symbolic representation of meaning.
That's
but
it.
If that's the case, it seems artificially or inappropriately broad because mathematics and language are symbolic representations of meaning and are not art.
So, Cynthia, what do you say to David?
Well, that's a challenge. I think you're right about that. And so I might have to fix up my definition a little bit. And in my book, I think I do a little bit more sophisticated job of that, where it involves something sensuous and affective, emotionally affecting. And the sensuous part of it would be part that might tend to exclude the mathematical.
So, David, does that make you happy?
Not really, because, I mean, I do agree, and I can't argue this logically, but intuitively, it probably has to do something along the lines of aesthetics, because certainly when you talk about, you know, artistic and living your life artistically, you referred previously to, you know, do you live a life where you look at symbolic meaning of things, and that you know you can do that from a non-artistic framework.
But David, that I think that was the point of getting the sensuousness and all that in there,
is to get the
aesthetic dimension.
No, because I mean there is art that absolutely. I mean, first of all, that definition requires it to be about how it impacts the viewer, and there certainly is art that is not sensuous, but is. You know, many conceptual art is there's no sensual experience whatsoever.
Yeah,
it's a pure idea.
David, you've got a point. I mean, maybe we'll get to that point, but let's get some more callers in here. Michael in San Pablo is on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Michael.
You know, I love your topic.
What's your comment or question?
Picasso said, "Art is a lie that helps us to realize the truth." And I have another quote, Jessamine West: "Fiction reveals truth that reality obscures." I'd like to distinguish between art and science by a series of sounds that, if you reproduce them by pitch and amplitude and frequency, scientifically, that would be one way to look at it. And if you at the same sequence of sounds said that's my favorite song, that would be artistic. Art to me is when you look to the inside as the source of truth, and science when you look to the outside. Scientifically, you can reproduce without feeling it. In the art, the truth happens to be what it actually moved you to. And I think there's an art to absolutely everything. The art is the inner vision of what there was. Science is the reproduction of the outer circumstance. You need both to play the music. And as far as the thing about, yeah?
Well, Dave, I'm going to give Cynthia a chance to respond to some of that. Okay. Thanks for the call, Dave. Michael, are you there?
I'm here. I'm not sure I understand the inner-outer distinction. That's what I'm sort of mulling over here.
Yeah, but how about this whole idea that truth has anything to do with art? I'm pretty skeptical about that, even if Picasso said it. I mean, you know, and your definition doesn't say anything about truth. It's a symbolic expression of meaning. That's fine. I don't know, but truth and falsity is a...
I think we're Picasso, gonna get into a lot of multiple truths if we start to say that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, truth is going to be milked of its meaning, I think.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So, Cynthia, you agree with that, with John's...
I don't think so. I'd like to separate meaning from truth.
So you don't think that art is necessarily a vehicle for truth, or that to praise art is to call it true or something? I mean, you don't think that at all?
I don't think so.
Okay. We've got a retired art teacher, Marion Berkeley, on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Marion.
Hi. Well, what I wanted to say was when I was teaching junior high, I realized that the that art was kind of a direct pipeline to intelligence in the brain. And sometimes kids quote, you know, that famous line, he's not working up to his potential. And the potential is sort of revealed in the non-linear art world. And it also, because it does that, it also helps the handicapped, you know, to express things that come from really some kind of deep intelligence.
So, Mary, thanks for the call. Cynthia, what do you think about...
I definitely agree with that, and that sounds to me like Howard Gardner's idea of multiple intelligences, which I was going to mention later. That and if you think of the, you know, recent philosophy of mind has emphasized emotional intelligence, that intelligence isn't just sort of logic and language and linguistic reasoning. It has a, there are other forms of figuring things out and solving problems that that can't account for.
Yeah, there's all these recent studies that show that the role of art education, when you train people in the arts, both to produce art and to consume art, you do all sorts of cool things for their mind and for their imagination. And I guess that kind of goes along with the line of thought you and Mary were having, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
So we've got an email here that makes a good distinction that maybe we have time for before we go to break. This is from Paul in San Francisco, and he says, how about the difference between intrinsic and inherent value? An object is inherently valuable if its experience or contemplation is intrinsically valuable. I like that distinction. So that makes the art inherently valuable if the contemplation of it is intrinsically valuable. Makes a chocolate chip cookie inherently valuable if eating it, I guess, is intrinsically valuable.
So the thing that has intrinsic value is the experience. Some philosophers think that only experiences have intrinsic value, but something that gives rise to that experience directly, that would have this inherent value. Yeah, do you like that distinction, Cynthia?
I think so, and that's where I would put meaning, that the meaning is what has inherent value, and the work that's expressive of meaning has the intrinsic value.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're discussing the value of art with Cynthia Friedland.
What good is art? Should government subsidize the arts? At the expense of what else? And what about the role of art in education? Is arts education a good thing? Surely it is. But when push comes to shove, how good? How much is it worth? What should we pass up to make sure that our kids learn something about art?
We'll tackle these questions and take more of your calls and emails when Philosophy Talk continues.
Each week, we try to give you a little musical art here on Philosophy Talk. In this case, the artist is Bob Dylan. I'm John Perry. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm Ken Taylor, and our guest is Cynthia Friedland from the University of Houston. Cynthia, when it comes to funding decisions, especially in the schools, you know, art always loses out when money's tied to math and science and other supposedly more practical things. What do you think this shows about how we as a society value the arts? And I'm probably guessing you don't think we're right to value the arts in that way, whatever that shows. What do you think this shows about?
I think it shows that we value sort of factual information more than ways of thinking. And that's a problem, because what do people really want in adult workers? I think what employers want is people who are creative problem solvers, not just people who know a bunch of facts. And so if there was more emphasis on art, I think there'd be, you know, more room for children to develop their ways of solving problems and thinking creatively.
So I'm going to give you an audience with the governor of California, the president of the United States, and you have a minute to convince this power broker that there's got to be more funding for art in the schools, that it's not a frill. Convince, I'm Arnold or George. Convince me in a minute.
Well, why does it have to be an either or? For almost any form of knowledge of facts, it could be enhanced by including art, and that can help the students learn to think more creatively, and it can also just intrigue them more. So you teach U.S. history, you use some war movies, and you get the students to criticize the representation of the facts and have a more critical appreciation of U.S. history. You teach Spanish language, you show Picasso paintings, or you show Frida Kahlo paintings and get the students engaged in understanding things about Spanish and Mexican culture and history, as well as learning a lot of words, too, at the same time. even things like physics and biology, I think students can be attracted and engaged by learning about fictions in movies and how to really think about tough topics like genetic determination and time travel.
Okay, you convinced me, but I'm kind of easy. I don't
know if you convinced Arnold. I don't know about George. I think it's a very good point. And another point we ought to make is that, you know, kids today, a lot of their life is spent interacting with works of creative imagination, that is watching TV, playing computer games, and so forth and so on. So it's just art education is a way of educating them about a large part of the life. Now, what you're listening to now is Philosophy Talk. We're asking, what good is art? Should government subsidize the arts? If so, at the expense of what? And what about the role of art in education? Should we demand it in our schools? Why not? We want to hear from you.
Join us by calling 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or email us at comments@philosophytalk.org. So look, you talked about works of creative imagination. I agree that we should be training the imagination, as well as, you know, the rational facilities and the numerical facilities. I mean, I think it's really important that we train the imagination, and I think art education is a way to train the imagination. But, you know, when most people think about art and imagination, you know, imagine the ways the world might be, they think of literature and they think of painting, because these are kind of more representational. But make a case for music. I mean, how does music help to train the imagination? How does music help you to see the world better? Or is it just pretty noise? I mean, does it have any function besides being pretty noise?
Well, students are immensely involved in music. You know, they're on their iPods all the time, and I think music is the most important way that they think of forming their identity and their allegiances and expressing themselves. So I think that's very important.
Yeah, but is that music with, I mean, I'm thinking of, I agree with you about that, especially if the music that the kids listen to on their iPods, you know, hip-hop, rap, rock and roll. I mean, it's all got words. And I read a book, I can't remember who the author is, about what good are the arts. I was reading some book reviews of it, and this fellow argues that the literature is the highest form of art, because it's the only art form that you can use to reason and criticize.
Carrie.
Right. It's the only art form that you can use to reason and criticize. If you can't do that with, I mean, you can do that with music, set the music, but pure music. Can you do anything like that with pure music? Why does pure music matter?
Well, let me give you an example. Let's play a little bit of something by Yo-Yo Ma, you tell us how that fits your definition, how that's a symbolic expression of meaning, and then, you know, why people should learn to appreciate it or produce it in school. Now that was kind of nice. I wouldn't put it up there with Hey Jude or some real classic like that. But what about that, Cynthia? Where's the symbolic of expression meaning in that
that's
little song?
Well, that's Yo-Yo Ma playing Oscar Piazzolla, The Art of the Tango.
Exactly,
and so
right. Yeah.
One of the key things music can do is give us windows into other cultures, and I think that's one of the great things about the new phenomenon of world music. You know, we live in a very diverse, multi-ethnic society, and people who are going to become workers for the U.S. are going to have to learn how to interact with people all over the world. And being able to appreciate other cultures' music is one step toward that kind of ability to understand diversity and appreciate it.
We've got some callers on the line. Susan in San Francisco, welcome to Philosophy Talk. What's your comment or question or observation?
Oh, hi there. My observation is that students need to have hands-on. They need to develop their small motor, the way their hands work and the way their bodies work by doing crafts, playing the recorder, painting, drawing, all at age level. Arts can be integrated in all the grades. The teachers present things should be more artistic, memorizing plays and poetry. We don't see that in the schools anymore. Kids can't even draw a straight line.
So, Susan, let me ask you, the first part of what you were saying, you sounded like you had a very utilitarian kind of utilitarian conception of why we should do art. It helps develop motor skills and stuff like that. And the second part of what you were saying, it sounds like you were talking really about the intrinsic importance of art. So which is it, or is it both for you?
Oh, it's both. Kids discover what is good, beautiful, and true, what's behind the mask when they do art. They know what is harmony and what is dissonance. It's so important, and in a way it feels like it's a conspiracy that art is taken away. The rhetoric behind why art is important is entirely lost. It's a crime.
I agree with you. Thanks for the call, Susan. Connie in Oakland's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Connie. What's your comment or question?
Hi. Well, it probably goes along with the last caller a little bit, but I think that one thing that that hasn't really been mentioned a lot is just the whole process of art and how much children learn from looking at a blank page and turning that blank page into something. And I think that there's a lot of there's a lot that's been lost in our society where people are waiting for instructions and people can't organize their thoughts. And I think that if you just try to put what you're looking at onto paper, there's a process that you need to learn that is really valuable in life.
Yeah, so Connie, thanks for the call. Cynthia, what do you think of what either Susan or Connie had to say or whatever?
I agree with both of their points. I think those were good points, that students can learn a lot from doing art that will be valuable for later life skills, you know, working creatively. In music especially, there's a lot that has to do with playing with other people, working together, working as part of a team. It's kind of like sports. You learn cooperation, you learn strategizing, you learn discipline and how to achieve a goal and how to compete and things like that.
Yeah, so you think that art is really, but it sounds like you think both that art is intrinsically valuable, right? Intrinsically valuable and also extrinsically valuable.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think both those things.
So, Cynthia, on that note, I'm going to have to thank you for joining us. It's been a very nice conversation, despite the technical glitches.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Our guest has been Cynthia Friedland, professor and chair of the Department of Philosophy at the University of Houston, author of But Is It Art?
We also want to thank all the callers we didn't get a chance to talk to and some interesting emails that we didn't get to. Thanks for joining us and sticking with us through this somewhat technically challenged episode of Philosophy Talk.
Yeah, so John, what did you learn today, except that even in the darkest moments, you can still rise to the occasion as a radio host?
Well, I like Cynthia's definition. I do think it's going to turn out to be too broad, so we'll have to think about how to narrow it. I'm going to make a donation and get a copy of her book so I can read what her fully thought-out definition is. Whether you can philosophically justify it or not, it's a great tragedy that kids don't learn more about art in school. It's a great tragedy in my life I didn't learn more about music in school, so I could understand it better.
I learned a lot about music because I played a lot. I played the trombone and the violin, my whole long life was spent music. But you know, it's true. I was really discouraged when I was in the seventh grade from art because the teacher gave me an F on an art project, and I have thought ever since I was not an artistic person, and it curtailed my artistic creativity. So, you know, yeah. I think artistic production is at least as important as artistic consumption. You know,
in seventh grade, I signed up for chorus, and after the first day, the teacher called me up and said she was transferring me to study hall. So I think that it did affect my life in a negative way. I got a lot of homework done in study hall.
So this conversation continues, as always, on our blog, theblog.philosophytalk.org, where our motto is cogito ergo blogo, I think, therefore I blog.
You can download episodes of our program from our website as well. You can get podcasts. The podcast costs you a little bit, but every penny goes to Philosophy Talk and producing more of it.
There you go.
Hello, I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for downloading this episode of Philosophy Talk. Your support helps keep our program on the air and online.
Visit our website, philosophytalk.org, to keep up with the latest downloads and upcoming features.
And as always, thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.